What does technology have to do with care work? How have industrialization and new technologies changed housework over the past centuries? Have the changes been positive or negative? And what do the definitions of technology and care work have to do with any of this? We'll be attempting to answer some of these questions this episode, where we'll especially be looking at one book, More Work for Mother, The Ironies of Household Technology, From the Open Hearth to the Microwave, by Ruth Schwartz-Cohen. Hello everyone, my name is Em, I use they-them pronouns, and I'll be your host on this episode, where we'll be talking about what the co-history of care work and technology looks like and what we can learn from it. So without further ado, let's start. So, as stated, we'll be talking about care work and technology and their historical relationship. But being the philosopher I am, I require some definitions to get started. So let's ask, what do we mean when we say care slash care work? And what do we mean when we say technology? Care is, like almost everything, quite hard to define. In their 2015 article, The Politics of Care and Technoscience, Martin et al. Say as much when they state, quote, care is a slippery word. Any attempt to define it will be exceeded by its multivocality in everyday and scholarly use. In its enactment, care is both necessary to the fabric of biological and social existence and notorious for the problems that it raises when it is defined, legislated, measured, and evaluated. What care looks and feels like is both context-specific and perspective-dependent. End quote. Later on, they do give a definition of care, not care work specifically, but care in general, which goes as follows. Quote, care is a selective mode of attention. It circumscribes and cherishes some things, lives, or phenomena as its objects. In the process, it excludes others. Practices of care are always shot through with asymmetrical power relations. Who has the power to care? Who has the power to define what counts as care? And how it should be administered? End quote. The idea of care and care work as selective modes of attention, which exist in a field of asymmetrical power relations, is something we'll see resonate with our further analysis. But for now, let's get into some concrete examples of what the practice of care work can look like and what some of the important aspects of it are. Some examples of what care work can be are, either paid or unpaid, nursing, housework, including childcare, and all forms of teaching. Generally, care work is work that provides others with the means to live slash develop their capabilities. Important aspects of this care work are that it's historically and still mainly been done by women slash people inhabiting feminine gender roles. As a side note, I will be intermittently using the term femmes to refer to people who are not necessarily women, but nonetheless inhabited feminine gender roles relevant to care work. The corresponding term I will also be using intermittently for people inhabiting masculine gender roles is masks. Care work is also often considered to be intrinsically motivated and therefore different from other work slash less work in the classical sense. Especially unpaid care work is not counted in many calculations of GDP or other economic metrics, therefore made invisible and taken for granted. This is also done in part because it's difficult to quantify care work and its results due to its personal aspects. Nonetheless, care work, paid and unpaid, is absolutely central for the functioning of any society. We'll mainly be talking about care work, which is a little less slippery as a term than care, but still encompasses a multitude of activities. More specifically, we'll be focusing on housework this episode, some examples of which are cooking, cleaning, laundering, and childcare. Now, let's move on to the question, what is technology? Merriam-Webster defines technology as 1. The practical application of knowledge, especially in a particular area, and 2. A manner of accomplishing a task, especially using technical processes, methods, or knowledge. This is a common definition of technology. Some more aspects of the common view of technology include a positive connotation due to a connection to material progress, but also a deterministic connotation, in the sense that technological progress is not something that can be stopped. And also, a narrow field of where technology acts and what it is. This field is mainly associated with engineering, IT, business, and the hard sciences like physics and chemistry. In this episode, I'll be arguing that technology is much more than that, and that the common, narrow definition of technology is important to critique while analyzing the history, present, and future of care work. since from a historical perspective, the narrowness of the definition of technology can be viewed as a way to exclude and marginalize certain groups of political subjects. As will become apparent in the following, these groups include women and femmes and racialized people, including racialized women and femmes. To support this claim, I'll be drawing upon a couple of definitions of technology from another corner of science slash academia, anthropology and philosophy. From anthropology, Mark Davis says this about technology in his 2015 article, After the Clinic. Quote, technology is never simply just technology. It can be a tool or machine or the exchange of digital information, but it is also an idea, it has its historical moment, and it is the site for the exercise of politics, end quote. And from philosophy, Paul B. Preciado states in his 2002 book, Countersexual Manifesto, that technology is, quote, an element within a complex system of regulating devices that define relationships between bodies, tools, signs, machines, uses, and users, end quote. These two definitions, with their key components of introducing politics and the regulation of relationships between bodies, machines, uses, and users as important aspects of technology, will be our guide to analyzing the co-history of technology and care work. My analysis aims to be done from an intersectional and critical care perspective and practice as defined by Martin et al., meaning, quote, paying attention to the privileged position of the caring subject, wary of who has the power to care, and who or what tends to be designated as the proper or improper object of care, and, quote, a practice of critical care is thus one that is committed to an intersectional feminism that can grapple with constellations of power manifest in capitalism, colonialism, race, class, ability, and gender. Especially the intersections of gender, class, and race will be the focus later on. But first, let's get to a couple of statements that will, like the definitions we just laid out, accompany and guide us through our analysis. These statements are, one, that technology has played a key role in how care work has changed during the course of time. Two, a part of that change has been that technology has been used to oppress the living bodies that do care work. Three, the common narrow definition of technology as a simple application of knowledge or as a tool has and does play a role in the exclusion of living bodies that do care work from discourses of power. Four, that the living bodies that do care work are an essential part of any type of technology used in care work and should be treated as such. Our main topic of analysis will be the book More Work for Mother by Ruth Schwartz Cohen. It was published in 1983 by the historian of technology and science. The subtitle is The Ironies of Household Technology from the Open Hearth to the Microwave, which gives us a good hint at the general topics of the book. It focuses mainly on the changes in housework, which we previously identified as a form of care work, and which, as a term, can be interchanged with the term care work throughout this episode. Due to technological advancements during the industrialization of the USA during the 19th and 20th century, and especially what these changes meant for the people, but from a certain point onward, almost exclusively women and femmes that did housework during this period. We're talking roughly around 1800 to 1980. Cohen starts off by observing that at the time and place of her writing, 1980s USA, there existed, and still exists today to certain extents, what she and many other historians call a doctrine of separate spheres. This doctrine designates women and femmes to the sphere of the home and housework, and men and masks to the public sphere, where work, politics, etc. is done. Now, right off the bat, I will state as an appendix that this doctrine is a form of gender essentialism, or essentialism in general, meaning it assumes that certain types of bodies, here masculine and feminine, have essential, unchangeable traits slash natures, quote-unquote, that determine what those bodies can do, think, become, etc. This form of essentialism is common in conservative narratives of society, but has no larger scientific, historical, philosophical, or moral basis or legitimacy. Now, with that out of the way, back to the book. Cohen traces this doctrine and the designation of housework as women and femmes work back to its historical roots by identifying that the term, as it is still used today, would have been nonsensical due prior to industrialization, since before it, most people, men, women, farmers, artisans, or otherwise, worked in or on the grounds of either their own or somebody else's house or home. The beginnings of industrialization in the 19th century in England and the United States made the emergence of the term housework and its connotations as women's work possible by creating places, the factory being chief among them, outside of people's homes where large amounts of work were done, mainly by men in masks. She also ascertains that at the same time that the home and housework came to be associated with women and femmes, these spaces and concepts also started to be associated with, quote, a particular emotional tone, warmth, with a particular public stance, morality, and a particular form of behavior, passivity, while at the very same time, quote unquote, work became associated with men, hard-heartedness, excitement, aggression, and immorality, end quote. She goes on to state that historians, who I agree with, have suggested that these new designations and associations served, and still serve, the interests of certain powerful segments of society. For example, quote, manufacturers who needed, and I would add, wanted, markets for the goods they were producing, ministers who needed audiences for their sermons, political leaders who needed to stabilize their electorates, and the newly rich men who needed to be able to cement their status with the mortar of elaborate hospitality that only homebound wives could provide, end quote. Now, it should barely need mention that most, if not all, of these people in these more powerful segments were men, white, and rich, or newly rich, as Cohen states. By the way, the fact that Cohen only mentions the categories of gender and wealth as aspects that make a political subject, i.e. a person, more powerful is something we will return to later in our analysis, but it is definitely worth keeping in mind. But where does technology fit into all this, since we are talking about care work's relationship to technology here? Well, Cohen argues, and I once again agree, that analyzing the physical tools, i.e. the technologies — Cohen switches between narrower and broader definitions of technologies throughout the book — that were involved in housework and how they changed it in the course of industrialization is an important part of understanding how the doctrine of separate spheres came to be what it is and what effects it has had and still has. Important pieces of knowledge in this context are the facts that the history of housework is intensely connected to the history of industrialization and technology / technological advances during the time of industrialization, but that there are major differences in how housework has been industrialized in comparison to work outside the home, which is more generally called work. For one, back in the 1980s, and still today to some extent, the home is seen as a place which hasn't been affected by industrialization and capitalism and the market economy as much, if not at all. The home was and is idealized as the last place of rest from the cutthroat world of work and economy, which is drawing on the previous associations of warmth and morality versus aggressiveness and immorality. Less pronounced forms of this dichotomy present industrialization as something that has had an impact on housework, but as something that still occurred outside the home, and the effects of that activity outside the home then influenced it in turn. Therefore, the home and housework was not industrialized itself, but influenced by the effects of industrialization. But Cohen points out that these narratives don't hold up when the history of household technology is analyzed. She does maintain that housework was industrialized differently from other forms of work. For example, most housework is unpaid, untimed, happens in isolation, and very importantly, the division of labor with which industrialization fundamentally changed other types of work did not occur in regards to housework. But she refutes the idea that housework was not affected significantly by industrialization, internally and externally, between 1860 and 1960. To better understand housework and its evolution, Cohen sets up two concepts: work process and technological system. Coincidentally, these overlap quite well with our two previous definitions of technology. But let's get to the concepts first. Cohen uses the words work process or work process instead of just using the word work to illuminate the fact that no activity in the home, or indeed at all, is simple, isolated, or able to be homogenized. The task of cooking, for example, does not just involve preparing the food at lunch or dinner, but also, quote, the procurement of that food by buying or raising it, its storage and prior preparation by canning, salting, freezing, refrigerating, etc., the maintenance of the energy source, stoking the hearth, damping the stove, adding the coal that is used to do the cooking, the maintenance and cleaning of the tools that are used to do the cooking, and the disposal of waste that results from the process. End quote. This example can be extended to any housework task like cleaning, laundering, childcare, etc. Now, if we remind ourselves of Preciado's definition of technology as, quote, an element within a complex system of regulating devices that define relationships between bodies, tools, signs, machines, uses, and users, end quote, we will see that there's a considerable overlap, but also how Preciado goes one step further by calling attention to the relationships between bodies and tools inside this complex system of the work process. Moving on to Cohen's concept of technological system, which emphasizes that each tool, machine, technology used in housework is a part of a larger network or system and requires many other technologies and structures to function. As Cohen puts it bluntly, quote, an electric range will not be much good if electric current is missing, and a washing machine cannot function in the absence of running water and graded soap, end quote. This concept overlaps with Davis's definition of technology as a site for the exercise of politics, since it shifts the focus from the singular technology and an individual household's decision to acquire a piece of technology to the broader conditions necessary for the individual use of a technology to be possible in the first place. City planning, for example. The realm where these conditions are mostly decided upon is the realm of politics and is therefore not free from the influence of power relations, or not as free as individual decisions are often made out to be. This here is a very important point to linger on for one more second, and to connect with the fact that throughout the time period we'll be talking about, pretty much every political office and important position at the top of manufacturing and advertising companies was held by men, people not involved in actually doing housework as it came to be during industrialization. I've taken the time to elaborate on these concepts because they'll be very important moving forward, but I also find them to be very relevant to thinking about any activity, especially economic, in our current time, and I personally see a lot of potential in developing attention on an individual and societal level to these concepts. But here, I'll leave this as a side note. Now, with all of this in mind, equipped with our definitions of care work, technology, work process, technological system, and our statements about the role of technology in care work, let's move into our next segment, which will be a quick summary of Cohen's findings, and then into our last segment, which will be part discussions of the findings and part critique of the book. Cohen's book itself is very comprehensive and detailed, which is one of the main reasons why I would very much recommend it to anyone listening. But that fact makes giving a quick summary of it quite difficult. So as a primer, I feel obliged to say that in the following, I'll have to leave out some less important but still very interesting pieces of information, all of which are relevant by the fact that without them, the parts that I have deemed the most relevant would not have developed the way they did. In other words, everything I'll be talking about is contingent on many other factors that I won't be able to name here. But with that out of the way, into Cohen's findings. Cohen's analysis starts off on the frontiers of the pre-industrial United States at the 18th to the beginning of the 19th century. As we mentioned before, at this point in time, most people did housework, so the word itself wasn't associated with women and femmes work yet. But that's not to say that women and men didn't perform different tasks. Using the example of cooking, a task historically and currently still seen as women's work, more precisely, cooking a stew, and applying her concepts of work process and technological system, Cohen shows that both women and men were highly involved in the process of getting a meal on the table. While the housewife would have very probably cooked the stew, the husband would have invested a considerable amount of time and effort to acquire, by growing or buying, and prepare the necessary ingredients, meat, wheat, salt, water, etc., and tools, knives, fireplace, and the work process of cooking a stew would have been scarcely possible if the household were not integrated into technological systems that made the acquisition of coal and tools like a pot possible. These two points, that both men and women, not always equally of course, but none of the two was ever completely absent, were involved in the process, in the work process required for housework, and that key aspects of that housework would not have been possible without a household's connection to multiple technological systems can be generalized at this point in time, 18th to the beginning of the 19th century. It can be generalized to all other aspects of housework, such as cleaning, laundering, childcare, etc. Now, the latter point about technological systems would not change in its essence with the coming of industrialization. Surely, the technological systems a household was connected to changed tremendously during the course of industrialization, but the fact that households were connected to these technological systems did not. But the former point about the distribution of work in the work processes of housework would change substantially, also in essence and not just content, with industrialization. But before we get to that, two more key topics have to be addressed here. Servants and the differences between rich and poor. The servant class played a crucial role in housework throughout its entire history, but especially the pre- and mid-industrial period, which ended around the start of the 20th century. Cohen mainly mentions indentured servants from Europe and young people from poorer households as being part of the servant class. Race is not mentioned. But to put it simply, most households, even somewhat poorer ones, had one or more servants, maids, aides, etc. during almost the entire period of time we'll be talking about. The status and tasks of these servants varied based on their gender, age, wealth, and skill, but the important fact stands that housewives in many households during the 19th century did not perform all the tasks of housework themselves. And secondly, the main axis of difference and inequality Cohen identifies and focuses on in her book is class, which she often describes in the differences between rich and poor. Whether a household was well off financially or not had a significant impact on that household and the housework done within it and its relationship with new technology. Generally, richer households consistently enjoyed a comfortable standard of living and could afford more maids or servants in the time frame that that the servant class played a significant role in housework, and they could also afford newer technologies like stoves and later on washing machines, just to name two examples, earlier and with more freedom to choose than poorer households. Poorer households had very few, if any, of these options from the beginning of our time frame well into the 20th century. It was also common in the later 19th and into the 20th century that housewives of poor families had to pursue employment outside the home to keep their families alive. So, to our main point, what changed over time? What effects did this have? We said before that especially work processes and the role played in them by women and men changed in essence with the arrival of new technologies. But what does that mean specifically? To once again put it simply, in the early phases of industrialization, new technologies made men and masks household work easier or removed it entirely, while they didn't do the same for women and femmes work. An example for this is the stove, which eliminated the task of gathering and preparing firewood, a traditionally masculine task, but did not only not eliminate cooking, but also added steps to the work process associated with women. And in the later phases, new technologies, such as the vacuum cleaner, reduced the work done by servants, but not by the housewives themselves. The general decline of the servant class in the 20th century, a side note, which was not only due to new technologies, but also due to resistance against poor working conditions and poor social standing, plus new cultural individualized attitudes towards housework and especially childcare, ultimately led to modern housewives not doing considerably less work than their mothers or grandmothers. They were doing their work with considerably different tools, yes, but the advent of industrialization and new technologies had not led to a reduction in their overall working time. Now, at first glance, this seems to make little sense. We're used to technology signifying progress and improvements in efficiency, if we're using the common and narrow definition of technology, that is. But if we shift our perspective, which necessarily means shifting our definitions and our questions, we can begin to see a different picture. So, drawing on our expanded definitions, which encompass relationships and politics in the term technology, I propose that a main reason why industrialization didn't lead to improvement in time efficiency of housework is the fact that the most important technologies, on which all other technologies, such as stoves, sinks, refrigerators, etc., depend on, were, and still are, for the most part ignored. The living bodies doing the housework themselves. Women and femmes, which for the entirety of the time frame we've been looking at, had very little, if any, political power to partake in the development and distribution of new technologies. Cohen herself reaches a highly important conclusion on this point at the end of her book. Quote, "The technological and social systems for doing housework had been constructed with the expectation that the people engaged in them would be full-time housewives." End quote. This expectation is not able to be perceived using the narrow definition of technology, but without it, this idea and type of technology isn't possible at all. I personally argue that the exclusion of the living bodies doing houseworks from discussions about the technology involved in housework, and more generally also in care, has the effect, and therefore the purpose, of solidifying the existing social order and the doctrine of separate spheres. This is done in many ways, but the specific points I'm making here are, one, that technology and technological advancements are not neutral in this discussion. Two, drawing on Cohen's work, that historically speaking, technology and housework has had the effect of intensifying the amount of work expected of housewives. Here, a quick reminder that the vast majority of this work is completely unpaid. And three, going back to the first point, that narrow definitions of technology, which don't include relationships between bodies and tools and politics, have played a significant role in the continuation of this trend. So what can be done here? I'll discuss this further in the conclusion, but I propose to define not only the tools, such as vacuum cleaners and electrical wires, but also the advertisements promoting them, the political and economic context making their use possible, and especially the living bodies using them as technologies. But before we get to the consequences, potentials, but also risks of our new definitions of technology, I want to take the time here to critique More Work for Mother from an intersectional feminist perspective. Highly simplified, an intersectional perspective means paying attention to the multiple axes slash categories of identity and oppression that exist, and how they are connected and intersect to create unique forms of oppression. Three common categories are gender, race, and class, but other no less important ones are disability, age, geographical location, and you can go on. From this perspective, no analysis of social phenomena, and especially no critique of such, can slash should be done only using one or two of these categories. In my opinion, this is unfortunately what Cohen does in her book. She mainly uses the categories of gender and class. Most importantly, in my opinion, leaving out race for the most part. This is very important since the topic of analysis is the United States from as early as on as the 17th and 18th century. Slavery is mentioned explicitly once on page 112-20 in a subchapter about domestic servants. Cohen then goes on to elaborate on black women as household servants for a couple of pages, but this social dimension is by no means a focus. In her elaborations about the differences between richer and poorer households, she does not mention the fact that black households in the US were and are disproportionately poorer, also due to the inherent racism of US American society. The word racism itself does not appear once in the book, although tellingly, patriarchy and capitalism do. She also uses the term women to designate all people doing housework without further differentiation or discussion, thereby not considering important differences between white women and women of color, and furthermore between able-bodied and disabled women, white disabled women and disabled women of color, and the list could go on. These and other exclusions are important aspects that should be viewed critically when reading and talking about the contents of not just this book, but any piece of information. Relevant questions should always be, who is this coming from? What is their social, economic, and political position? What effects could these factors and the contents they lead to have? But to put this critique more in context, we should remind ourselves that this book was written in the early 1980s, well before intersectional frameworks developed largely by black feminists, such as Kimberly Crenshaw, became visible and important parts of larger debate in feminism, history, social, and technology studies. This is not to say that there were no black voices that Cohen could have included in her analysis even during her research in the 1980s. Black feminist thought in the U.S. has a long history, and its beginnings are often traced back to Sojourner Truth's 1851 Ain't I a Woman speech, which was, not so fun fact, not the title of the speech at all. The original was transcribed by a friend of Truth and released in 1851 and was titled On Women's Rights. The much more well-known Ain't I a Woman version was edited slash written by a white female abolitionist and released in 1863. Large parts of the content and language were changed to make Truth, who was of Dutch heritage and spoke with a distinct Upper New York State Low Dutch accent, sound more like a stereotypical Southern slave, to make her speech sound more authentic. If you're interested in learning more about this, there will be a link to the Sojourner Truth Project website in the show notes, where you can compare the speeches and even hear how Truth might have sounded. In the context of this podcast episode, I'll leave my critique here, even though there's much more to be said about white feminists, especially in the US, relationship with racism, and black women especially. As a conclusion, I'd like to end with a short discussion of the possibilities and also risks of my previous proposal to define the living bodies that perform care and housework as technologies. I argue that claiming the term technology by redefining it in this way calls out harmful and exclusionary narrow definitions and narratives of technology and who is involved in the progress so often associated with it. Similarly to Cohen's concepts of work process and technological system we discussed earlier, which force one to consider all the necessary moving parts, people, and I would add interests, that make housework possible, I think the same awareness should be extended to our thinking about technologies as a whole. The point is to create a framework where our initial statement of the living bodies that do care work are an essential part of any type of technology used in care work and should be treated as such is possible. Another important point is that the ideas, although it's probably more accurate to say ideals, we have of technology are historically linked to ideals of civilization and progress. Ideas and ideals that have been used to oppress and exclude women and racialized peoples for centuries. Redefining technology is one possible way to disrupt the patriarchal, racist, and capitalist narratives these ideas are based on. That being said, there is a reason why I said one possible way and not the way. I realize that defining human beings as forms of technology is not easy or even desired for some. A primary method of oppressive narratives, regimes, and systems is the dehumanization of the people that are being marginalized, silenced, oppressed, and even killed. Applying the term technology to people and their lives has the potential to be used in dehumanizing ways and lead to the exact opposite of what my goal is by trying to broaden its definition. That's why I think it's always necessary to check whether or not using a broader definition of technology in a certain situation leads to a critique capable of making a life that was previously excluded or unvalued possible, or if it leads to the opposite. Finally, I take inspiration from one of my absolute favorite philosophers, whom I've already quoted once in this episode, Paul B. Preciado. His books, Testo Junkie, and especially the Countersexual Manifesto, show how technology can and has been claimed and made into an effective axis of resistance and change. If you want to do some further reading on these topics, all my sources, plus a couple more recommendations, can be found in the show notes. In the meantime, thank you for listening and take care.